It's time for Chat with a Cat. It's right here on KPAY Sports 1290. As every Friday, we talk with an influential member of the Chico State Athletic Department, whether a current athlete or administrator or a former athlete. And in our final installment during this 2020-2021 season, we are talking with one of the greats, a Chico State Hall of Famer on the mound, all-time winningest pitcher in Chico State Wildcat history, friend of the program, friend of mine, John Eric Hernandez joins us. Are you in Catalina right now?
No, I'm actually in Huntington Beach. Funny thing, I live about 5 minutes away from Balvin.
Oh my gosh, another Chico State legend.
Correct.
Chico State legend. That's awesome. That is fantastic. So you guys must play some golf and do that every now and then.
We golf once a week. Yes.
Okay. Good. Keep it in the family. All the Chico State boys like to swing the stick. John Eric Hernandez played between 1997 and 2000. And if you're a longtime Chico State fan, his name's synonymous with some of the great baseball teams, the Wildcats, have ever had. In fact, you can make an argument, and he likes to show off the ring as one of the – he's the only member of the Chico State Wildcat family that played as a player on two national championship teams. How much do you hold that over some of your former teammates? Like, yeah, you know, the 97, that was great, but I also got the 99 one. I mean, do you do that at all?
Man, I mean – I do it all the time.
Yeah.
The thing about us, well, our alumni is, and I tell people this all the time, I speak to my teammates, I would say, once every day or every other day. I mean, we're in this text message, us that live here in Southern California, and we speak all the time. And, of course, Bao, being who he is, likes to own his two cents of how, if it wasn't for him, we went to 1-99. But I actually like to say that I have two. And the first one, we didn't win with him. On the team.
In 1997. It was really a tremendous run, and I want to go back to when you first decided to come to Chico State. Now, I mean, you set all these records. You had this incredible run of success, and as a freshman, you were really one of the standouts on a pitching staff that had yourself, you had Josh Osborne, Soldati closing, and there was just a lot of pieces on that staff that were kind of thrown in together for Lindsey Meggs and Dave Taylor at the time. Talk about, one, your decision to come to Chico State. Did you have many suitors for your talents? And two, how the season transpired where you just kept getting the ball, you kept winning, you kept getting the ball, you kept winning. It was really a magical ride.
I came to Chico after my senior year in high school. There's a guy named Bob Myers. He coached in Chico in 95, 96. He coached my father at Long Beach City in the 70s. And he's a friend of my family and a friend of the island, so to speak. He came over and watched me throw one time, and he's like, hey, listen, love to have you go to Chico. You have to try out like everyone else. So went to Chico, and I tried out, and Coach Meggs brought me in and said, hey, listen, just let you know, I'm doing you this a favor. I don't really take freshmen on the team. I'm more of a JUCO transfer guy, but I'll see what, you know, you can do. And I went out there and I threw well. And then I think I was the only freshman to make the team that year. Me and Ramon something. God, again, this is 23 years ago.
That's okay. We're getting old. We're getting old.
I made the team. Ramon Harrell is the name. I made the team. And then as the season progressed, I started as a closer. So I closed my first 3 weeks of the season. And then Coach Meggs was like, hey, what do you think about starting? And I'm like, well, I started in high school, so I'd love to try it. I have to say this. I won 13 games my freshman year. A lot of it is due to the run support. I believe that my run support my freshman year was upwards of 8 or 9 runs a game. I mean, those guys were, I mean, for some reason, every time I pitched, they just hit really well.
It was one of the great offensive – the prowess of that team offensively was – I mean, 1-9 was kind of ridiculous. I mean, you talk about – I think the number 8 or 9 hitter had 50 RBIs. I mean, this is a team that was putting up double digits. That was a routine type of game. How did it feel to have an offense like that knowing, hey, I might give up a 4 or 5 spot. That's okay. These guys will score 8.
I did. I mean, I remember, you know, we'd get – get up by so much that I would just see fastball zero all the time. And I'm like, my ERA is going to be like 5, but I'm still going to win games, I guess. It was just neat because I was coming from Catalina and, you know, there wasn't anything structured. It was just like you go out there and play. It was kind of like, you know, you would play on the playground. You get to Chico and you have, you know, Boo Carlson, who is a great leadoff hitter. You have Dave Mellis, who I think was probably one of the better players ever come from Chico. I mean, he was so cerebral. I mean, he made Steve Gottawala and Richard Gregory to what they were today. I mean, they knew what was coming because Dave, you know, was looking at pitches. He was looking at how the defense shifted. He was picking signs. I mean, he was, I think, the catalyst of that 97 team.
You know, and it goes as one of the great, you know, it's one of the unspoken things, but it's not in this age of where the Houston Astros are getting vilified for what they did. But and I've talked about it a lot during Chico State baseball games. What Chico State did and how they were able to decipher pitch sequence and what pitchers might throw, as opposed to what the Astros did, which was using technology and really using it in a way that was clearly cheating. I look at it, what Chico State did, and I think most baseball people do, as complete gamesmanship. I mean, if you're going to give away the sign of what they're going to throw by not protecting that sign, I am more than happy to take that sign and let my teammate know what is coming. That's happened in baseball for 160 years. That hasn't changed. And I was surprised. I think in the old NCAC, teams weren't used to that. That's what it seemed like.
Right. I mean, it really progressed. I mean, I know we're not talking about the 99 team, but
yeah,
we had a guy who you know of by the name of Alec Adame, and he was the best I've ever seen at that.
Yes.
I mean, the best. I mean, he could pick anything. I mean, I remember being in Alabama, and they knew that we had our signs, and they had the pitching coach giving signs to the relaying signs to the catcher, and he was being blocked by two guys because Dahmer was picking everything. And, I mean, that guy was amazing.
And it took him 3 batters to get the new sequence.
And exactly.
I sat with him, Coach Meggs, Coach Taylor, and Dahmer at one of the games that Chico wasn't playing, and he says, "I'll have him, Coach. I'll have him. I'll have him in an inning. I'll bring him back." He came back, says, "I got him." They tried to change him, but I got him. I think a big reason why 99 wins is you absolutely lay into that closer who was a fastball slider guy, had an ERA sub 1, yet you guys were sitting on pitches because you knew it was coming and they couldn't decipher it. You know, and let's go back to Dave Mellis, because he was a guy, he found his way to get on base. His on-base percentage was nearly 500. So if he's at first base, he found a way to get those signs to Steve and Rich. And boy, and when you're as good a hitter as those two guys were and you know what's coming, look out.
I mean, to go back to that team, I mean, everyone bought into the role so heavily. I mean, you know, we had two DHs. We had Shane Howe as a left-handed batter. We had Eric Christensen as a right-handed batter. I mean, the lefty was throwing, we knew Eric was in. If a righty was throwing, we knew Shane was in. I mean, and everyone bought in. I mean, Oscar Hirschhorn, I mean, it was just so foreign to me coming from, again, from Catalina, to see how structured it was and how everyone bought into, you know, what their role was on the team. I think that, above all, we carried that really well as far as the team goes. I mean, the fact that we also went in there, you know, as green, no one really knew who we were, that definitely worked in our favor. So.
How was it being a freshman on a team that primarily is a bunch of juniors and seniors? I mean, Coach Meggs had told you that, you know, I don't usually take freshmen, but, you know, I'm kind of doing it as a favor to Coach Myers, and you've impressed me here in the bullpen. But there's a big difference there. Guys have been playing maybe at Chico State or at their JC. They come here. They're a little bit older. You coming from maybe not as much structure. How was that How was that transition?
It was, you know, it was tough. I don't know if you remember the 90s. I redshirted in 96, and I was the ball boy. And I remember every time it was a foul ball, I'd go. And I remember being in the dorms, and, you know, people would laugh like, "Oh, you're on the team, but you're the ball boy." And halfway through the season, you know, I would go after there'd be a foul ball out of the stadium, Nettleton Stadium, and I'd go run. And midway through the season, Coach Meggs pulled me aside and goes, "You might want to wear your turfs." and not your spikes. You know, that way you're a little more incognito when you run out for the ball. So I was kind of the butt of the jokes in 96 and in 97. They knew who I was, which was great, but I still, you know, I didn't prove myself yet at that time. I'm talking fall of 96 into the 97 season. Gradually, I started doing better and playing well. I garnered the respect of the older kids, which is cool. But to this day, I mean, I'm in a text message with those guys as well, and I'm still the kid. I'm still, you know, the young one of those guys.
Still the young guy. Before we go to break, I want to ask you about Alabama, and we're going to get to the highlights and how amazing that 1997 national championship run was. But first, I want to relive the regional a little bit because you were at home. The crowd was packed in. Remember, there was such fervor for not only your team. You guys were drawing incredible crowds. But there was excitement because, you know, the Chico Heat were going to play in the summer. So there was this exuberance for baseball that really I haven't seen since. During those late 90s was just a magical time. But you're hosting that regional. It's a packed house. You're taking on the likes of Cal State Los Angeles. You're taking on some really good ball clubs. And you're taking on Fort Hays. And you're in that championship game. It's the one-or-done game. Winner, it's over. It's a winner goes to Alabama. And it's a tight game. I believe it was 3-3 in the sixth. And that's when Carlson gets that big hit. It breaks it open. Right. That feeling that you have when Carlson gets that hit.
It was amazing. We battled. I don't know if you remember the weather that weekend. It was roasting.
Yes.
I mean roasting. And this was before Middleton Stadium painted the bleachers.
Yes.
So it wasn't green back then. It was, you know, the silver reflecting. I mean, I felt like it was 115 on that field. So we battled. We were battling. I believe the wind was blowing out a little bit. And it was, you know, even just balls that were just fly balls were getting close. And we were, you know, some of us were like, you know, we come all this way. Like, we're not going to lose this. We're not. I mean, we just had that grit about us. I mean, again, we put in our work. I mean, we did. We felt that we worked the hardest in the fall of every team in the nation, out of any team in the nation. So we felt like, you know, we were due. You know, and good things happen to you if you put your work in. And Boo came up with that hit. I mean, and who knew? Little did we know that that wasn't even going to be his biggest hit of the year.
Absolutely. And that is forthcoming. I gotta say, though, that your team's ability to bounce back and the grindability, and, you know, Lindsey Meggs and Dave Taylor's carried that on, saying, I need a bunch of grinders. I can't have soft outs. And that was not a team that would get soft outs. I mean, soft out guys were not playing. I mean, the lineup was filled with guys that were tough outs.
Right. They, like, one thing, again, I mean, like I said, everyone bought into their role. We grinded. We took the dose. I mean, again, I didn't even know how important, you know, getting hit by a pitch was. But, I mean, Coach Meggs preached that. And Dave Malice, who, again, was, in my opinion, our biggest leader on the team, bought in like no other. And we followed suit. I mean, everyone followed suit. I mean, we were tough outs. We were tough outs. And I really enjoyed pitching for that team because I knew they were going to put up runs for me.
And what a difference it was from yours truly redshirting on a 7-win, 41-loss team in the early 90s. And some 5 years later, they're the best team in the country. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we continue our conversation down memory lane with John Eric Hernandez, Hall of Famer. And many consider him the greatest pitcher to ever pitch and toe the rubber at Nettleton Stadium in a Chico State Wildcat uniform. This is Chat with a Cat, and it's right here on KPAY Sports 1290.
The Steakhouse Angus Thick Burger is back at Carl's Jr. The 100% Angus beef topped with steak seasoning lets you know it's premium. The dripping A1 sauce lets you know it's delicious. My elusive whisper lets you know it's decadent. Go eat the Steakhouse Angus Thick Burger, part of the Angus Burger lineup at Carl's Jr. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Carl's Jr. restaurants. Price of participation may vary. A1 is a registered trademark of Kraft Foods.
But Chico now down to their final out in this miraculous season. Shelton comes set. Akoba takes the lead at second. The pitch to Sasser. He drives it in the right field. It's hanging up, though. Ironton angles over, and he misses the ball!
ball. It destroys Acuna. Going to second is Souther. He's safe. He's safe. We're tied at 12. An incredible play. Ironton, he was there. It went off his glove. And Chico has tied it.
Bring back memories, John Eric.
I just got, like, the chills like no other. I mean, I can listen to that every day and still get the same chills. It's amazing. Yes, it brings back. I mean, I don't know how I missed that ball.
I don't know either. I don't know either. You guys scratch and claw, and I'm going to backtrack in this national championship tournament, but I want to go over that because we just played the highlight. You're down 10-9. Or 12 to 11, I believe, in the night, 12 to 11. And you're down to your final strike, Sasser at the plate. He had made the error in the top of the inning that allowed the lead run to come in, and he's your last shot. Your thought is the ball's flying through the air, and the trajectory of the ball and your angle from where you're sitting, and I believe you guys were in the third base dugout.
So from where I was sitting, it looked like it was going to get down for sure. And then Ironton made a good play on it. And then the ball was tracking towards him. So if you can picture like kind of like a wide receiver going to a ball, you know, that's thrown by a quarterback. And he was there, and it looks like he just overran it. And he lost some lights. I have no idea. But if I remember correctly, the ball went between his glove and his head. I mean, he was there.
Yeah.
I have no idea how he missed it. I think that he was nervous or you know, it took him some energy to get to that ball. I have no idea. But I'm not going to question him, man. That was one of the greatest moments ever.
And here's a subplot, and I will let you know, and I don't know if Coach T has told you this, but about a year and a half ago, I believe it was, an email comes to the Chico State Baseball office for Coach Taylor, and it's from the aforementioned Greg Ironton, the right fielder formerly of Central Oklahoma, who says, "I do not know if you remember me, but I was the right fielder that missed the fly ball that could have won the national championship."
I had never heard this.
Yes, he wrote this long, and Coach T shared it with me. It was really an amazing story. He's a successful banker in, I believe, Tulsa, and he was telling his kids about it, and his mother was like, "Do you have anything from that game?" And he was saying, "I'm trying to tell my mom I've burned everything that I had from that game." But what was interesting is Ironton had a great game. He had four hits, including a home run, and drove in like four. Of course, you know he's sitting there saying, "If I catch the ball, we win the national championship." But he had said he had gotten over it. It's one of those footnotes in his baseball career. It's not something he's happy about, but he understands that how Chico State may feel differently about it. It was really a great exchange that he had with Coach T. But the game was far from being over because Sasser's in at second base. The game is tied. And then, incredibly, this happens. And I still hear people coming up to me saying, "Has your voice recovered yet?" And this is how your first national championship ended. And I imagine that you probably blacked out, John Eric, after this moment.
The pitch to the shortstop, Bagwell, off his glove! Here comes Sasser! Chico wins the national championship! 13-12! Chico wins it! Unbelievable!
Yeah, I lost it.
Love it.
You guys are running all over the field. Dog piles ensue. The lasting image, and I wish at the time we had cell phones and things of that nature, is I would have thought to pick up a cell phone because the scene of you all dogpiling at separate areas of the field and Central Oklahoma laying prone at their positions on the field. I believe the first baseman was a big, tall left-hander named Jared McIlvain. He was kneeling. Ironton was laying flat in right field. The center fielder was sitting like Andy Van Slyke after Francisco Cabrera's game-winning hit in 92. Bagwell was laying prone because he had the ball flick off his glove, jumping a little bit too soon on that ball that came out to him. They were all just laying down while you were running around them. And it was an amazing scene, and I can still see it as I'm screaming and going crazy, and still one of the greatest moments of my sports life. What were you going through?
I don't remember a single one of their players. I don't. I just remember my teammates. I mean, I think I was one of the crowd that jumped on Sasser and then went and jumped on Boo. I mean, the thing about that, what I do remember is I remember when Ireton missed that ball, I said, we're not going to lose this game. I knew that we were going to win. Like, it was a destiny. I mean, Coach Preach from the fall, like, do your work. It's a sprint. It's not a marathon. Do your work. You know, it'll work out in the end. I mean, you want to be there at the end. And we just all believe that we put in so much time and so much work that we weren't going to lose that game. As soon as Sasser was on second base, Boo was so clutch. I knew he was going to get a hit. The whole scene was surreal. When we dogpiled, it's hard. I mean, I guess I would say, like, I was numb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would tend to agree with you because it was one of the, you know, I think it's something that as a broadcaster, as a fan, and especially for you guys as a player being so close-knit and having come so close to going to the World Series the year before. Now, I know you were technically what you said, red shirt and ball boy guy, but remember a lot of these guys, some of these guys were on the previous year's team where they had a great opportunity to get through the regional and they couldn't get the bunt down. They bunted into a double play and they came so close. And so this team that had been through some trials and, you know, had played for Lindsey Meigs, who was incredibly, incredibly loved, but demanding, and to get through that and to win it that way, an amazing feat.
It was, when we were out there dogpiling and stuff, I mean, it was funny because I do remember after all that and the emotions, and then your adrenaline goes, and I was beat. I was so tired. I was exhausted. I remember that. Like, when we got on the bus, I was like, yeah, we still had the high, and I was just like, my goodness, I'm done. And then I remember, because you were at our hotel.
Yes, jumping into the
pool.
And
we all jumped in the pool.
We jumped into the pool with our uniform. And woke everybody up.
That was so fun.
That was so much fun. I jumped in. I had Levi's and a dress shirt. I didn't care.
It was so great.
So much fun.
So great.
Yeah, incredible moments as we relive here with John Eric Hernandez, the Chico State baseball team Hall of Famer, all-time wins leader in Chico State history as Chico wins the national title in 97. In 98, I always thought that team was, in a way, incredibly, I mean, they were very talented. You went to the World Series, you won the regional, but I felt like you were playing through mud for the season. It felt like the season was a struggle. It didn't feel as free flowing as 97, and I never as close as I was with that ball club, because it was the first year I got to travel broadcasting the games day in and day out on all the road trips. I still felt the 97 team was a little closer. 98 was just a little bit more disjointed. As talented as the team was, there was a disjointedness and maybe not as together. And I always thought it was a tremendous feat to get to the World Series, considering that I think there were some chemistry issues. Was that a right read on that?
Definitely. And it's funny because I always say when I talk about my years at Chico, the two most talented teams that I played on, in my opinion, where the 98 team was the number one as far as talent goes, and the 2000 team.
Yep, yep.
Because I think our pitching was the best pitching staff we've had. And those two teams didn't win. I think chemistry says a lot about a winning formula, in my opinion. I mean, we haven't got the 99 team, but the 99 team was by far the worst as far as talent goes. I shouldn't say worst. Compared to the other teams, I mean, God, we weren't even close to what we were. But going back to that 98 team, it was definitely chemistry.
You know, John Eric, we finish about, you know, 98. But when you talk about 99, I thought the 99 team was the most fundamentally sound team that Chico State has ever had. By the time that season ended, there was never a time you didn't get a bunt down. There was never a time you didn't execute a hit and run. It was really flawless baseball by the time you got to Alabama. And, you know, you had just mentioned it there, you know, in terms of talent in those 4 years, probably the least talented team, but by the end may have been the best team that Chico's ever had.
This is why I'm so big on chemistry, because I know earlier in the interview I spoke about how I talked to these guys once or twice a day. I'm sorry, once a day or twice a day. These guys, this is the team I'm talking about, the 98 team. Although the glue of this, ironically, are two guys from the 98 team, which is Jesus Moreno and Sal Gonzalez. But again, we talk every day, and we are so close. And I really do think the reason that we won is because of our chemistry. I mean, we were so close. I mean, we're still close to this day. All of us, again, we bought into our roles, you know, and our defense was, like you said, impeccable. Our defense was amazing. We make fun of Pops, Carlos Pops Fletus all the time because he wasn't the fastest guy, and he wasn't the flashiest on the defensive end, but he always seemed to get the runner by one or two steps every single time, whether it was routine play or diving play. Didn't matter. It was one or two steps.
And he was the David Eckstein of the CCAA. He
would, definitely.
He just had enough to get the throw there. And, of course, he had the penchant for getting a big hit. I mean, the guy, if you get him up there and, you know, bags juice, nobody out, you're up 8-0. You know, he may hit into a 6-4-3 or may foul out. But Pops Fletus, in a tie game in the seventh with a runner at third, and you need that run home with two outs, he's going to get that base knock, and that's what made him, you know, really special on that ball club.
Yeah, we had some guys that just seemed to step up in crunch time. I mean, Balvin, you know, pretty much stepped up all the time. That guy, he was always a tough out. But we just, I mean, Lou Sanchez, I mean, Luke Neal,
yes.
Who was a pitcher,
yes.
Who all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know, I'm not sure if he was an All-American or not, but he should have been. He raked that year. You know, we just had guys that just were so good. And again, I'm not sure. I mean, did we finish third in the conference that year?
I believe it was a tie. I believe you were in the kind of a. And I'm not sure. I don't know off the top of my head right now, but I know that it was a struggle. And I'm gonna get into that because one of my memories that I bring up to people all the time, and for years. Lindsey Meggs and Dave Taylor would never let me hear the end of it, is you guys opened the regular season in early February in 1999, and you had your spring training. Remember you had it in Palm Springs that year?
That's right.
You had it in Palm Springs, and I was doing a basketball game at San Bernardino, and I traveled over to see you guys, and you were having a workout there. And Coach Meggs comes up to me and says, Bach, this could be the best team. You know, I know our last two teams are good. This could be our best team, most complete team. So the first weekend, you come down, you fly back home, you go back down to Southern California to play Pomona. You get blown out in game one. First game of the doubleheader on Saturday, you get blown out. And then you get no hit by a right-hander named John Heaton. And the folks at Pomona tell me, yeah, this is amazing. He's been on a Mormon mission for the last 2 years. He hasn't picked up a baseball. So you guys are now 0-3. You're coming off of two straight World Series trips. I packed my stuff up because I wanted to get a seat on the van, and I don't think I wanted to be in Coach Meggs' van. So I got out there as soon as I possibly could. The first guy that's out there is our guest, John Eric Hernandez, and I'm all, Gilly. And you look at me and go, man, this is ugly. This is ugly. I go, we're playing so bad. And you said, yeah. And you're just kind of shaking your head like, whoa, you know, this is bad. The next day, you guys come out, you win a ball game, 4-3 on a bunt. You win a ball game. The team flies back home, and you come back down to Dominguez Hills, a team that's not supposed to be very good. You go there, you lose by a score of 9-2, and that was the infamous Fine Snacks.
Correct.
After the loss. You fall to 1-4 in conference play. And I'll never forget, there's dozens of parents waiting to take their kids out to dinner, and Lindsey Meggs isn't having it. I mean, he has absolutely had enough of you guys already, and explain what happens next. And explain the post-game discussion, what took place there.
The funny thing about the Pomona series before that is my family, I have, you know, a pretty big family, and like, should we come to Pomona or Dominguez? I'm like, come to Dominguez, you know, I mean, Pomona is too far away. So when we were played so bad in Pomona, I'm like, thank goodness you guys didn't come to that game. We'll do much better, you know, at Dominguez. And I pitched that Friday. So I had my entire family there. And we played awful. I mean, awful. And we're sitting there, and I remember all my family and all the parents are waiting. And Coach Meggs is like, you know, for every mental break we did, we had to go find snacks. And he just reeled off every mental error we had during that game. And every time we had to find snacks, after we go and run to him and run back, and then we'd talk again, snacks would, you know, back up. And by the time it was done, I remember my grandfather, who is no longer with us, was the only one there still. All the parents had left. Snacks is well beyond the outfield fence. I mean, it was awful. I remember getting back to the hotel. I believe we stayed on Lakewood Boulevard at the Holiday Inn there. And I was beat, and my family's like, what was that? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. They're like, you want to go to dinner? I'm like, can we just have pizza in the room? I don't want to talk about it. But I do believe that was the turning point of our season.
It was the turning point of the season. You guys would rattle off. You'd win the next three games. And I think, and I'm doing this from memory, but I think you won something like 17 of 18 after that.
Yeah.
It was definitely rock bottom. But I think to impart this to the listening audience, Snacks was a former assistant coach, Mike McCormick, big part of the coaching staff of those teams. And it got so late at Dominguez Hills that Lindsey Meggs told Snacks, get in the vans, turn on the vans, turn the lights on, because they may not be able to see where they're running. Because,
yes.
And you guys were exhausted because you were running sprints for every mental mistake. There were literally, he wrote down like 32 mental mistakes, and then he
Correct.
Explained them, and then while explaining them, he's roaching you. And it was one of the most, I was sitting in just in awe. But what was the mentality of the team as that's taking place? I know you guys aren't thrilled with how you're playing. You know you're better. You've got this incredible assortment of talent that you have, but it's just not happening. And what clicked? What clicked with that? Because was it simple, this is going to be a miserable season if we don't start playing better?
I think that I remember some things in the dugout. We were kind of a little bit cocky, a little bit too big for our britches, and it came back to, you know, bite us in the end. And I think that Coach Meggs saw that. I mean, we were messing around in the dugout. I do remember that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember putting Icy Hot, that same game, that series, or one, maybe it was the series before that, in Mike Hartman's hat. And, you know, he's sitting there, we're laughing about it, and just stupid stuff. I mean, stuff we shouldn't have been doing. I don't know why we did that, but he made us, you know, come back to reality, come back to earth. And ever since then, you know, we were locked in, and, you know, we're nothing but baseball, and kind of playing to our, you know, our abilities.
Yeah, incredibly. During the Pomona series, I did say they look like a high school team, and that turned into kind of a rallying cry. It got back to Coach Meggs. It got back to Coach Taylor. And, of course, as you guys were celebrating a national championship later on in the year, you had the team had jumped into a pool in Montgomery after winning the national title, sweeping through it. And I'm standing there absolutely enjoying what I'm watching. It's so great to win it. And all of a sudden, you guys all look at me and you start chanting, high school, high school, high school. And it was almost it's like, uh-oh, I better jump in or else I'm in deep trouble. So it turned into a really tremendous moment. I do want to ask you quickly about, and one of my memories, of course, of that season as well is George Pena and his quote in the school paper after Sonoma knocked you off in the conference tournament. Do you remember how that transpired? Sonoma was a pretty good ball club.
They were actually. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go. You go. You go.
They, you know, they were, you know, popping off quite a bit against us. And when they beat us, I mean, we did not like them dogpiling on our field. I mean, it was. I mean, my blood is curdling right now just thinking about it. I mean, it did not sit well with any of us. Any of us. I mean, we knew that we had to, you know, come back and show them, like, they're not going to do it again on our field. There's no way. I remember that week's practice, everyone was focused. Every time something, you know, if we had something that we didn't do right in practice, you know, one of the captains, myself, or Casey, or, like, you know, we start talking, hey, listen, you want to experience that again? You want to feel that again? And everyone just, I mean, we were locked in, of all locked in, that week of practice.
They won the conference title at Nettleton Stadium, and a lot of you sat in the dugout and watched them celebrate. And they, in fact, they took the conference banner and they ran it around the field, all around Nettleton Stadium. That had to be a bitter pill. But I think in the back of maybe Lindsey Meggs' mind, he was probably like, well, if these guys weren't ready, they'll be ready now.
Yeah, you know, I would even go as far as saying, like, that Coach Meggs was happy that they did that, because it lit a fire under us for sure. I mean, there was no way we were going to lose to those guys again.
George Pena, after that game in the school paper, said, we're going to be hosting the regional. They're going to come back here, and we are going to expletive deleted them, and we can't wait. So he didn't hold back, and the Orion at the time didn't put the expletive deleted. They left it in there. And so I remember John Gels, the head coach, still head coach at Sonoma. He said to me the following week, he goes, "What in the world got into Pena?" And I was like, "Man, you guys made these guys mad." He goes, "Oh man, I want to hear that." I said, "You made them mad. You guys dogpiled and you ran." I go, "Dogpiling is one thing, coach, but then you ran that banner around the field." And he goes, "Oh man." And he goes, and he kind of was a wry smile, as if to say, "Okay, you know, I get it." And then when it was over, I think he got it. I mean, you guys were unmerciful on them for the two games you beat them.
I was thinking after that series. I mean, I know we didn't lose another game, but I think the closest game we had was 9-3 against Rockers. Maybe, I'm not sure. I mean, but we rolled teams after that game. Rolled them.
Yes, and it was domination. It was domination, and after that, the Chico State Wildcats were nearly flawless. They played nearly perfect baseball. Talk to me really quick on that 99 team. Shannon Veroni, a guy who was a highly touted closer, I believe, at Long Beach State, but he tells them, "I want to play a position." They tell him no. He knows he's going to get drafted. He's got an electric arm. And he wants to play a position. What was being his teammate like? And did you guys ever, I think he pitched one inning because he wanted to say, "This is what I can do, but I'm not going to be pitching here this year." But talk to me about Shannon Veroni.
I honestly think, and I talked to Mike Hartman about this, I think that he may have feigned tightness in his elbow just so he can play in the field. I really do. I mean, and he was he was a great asset to our offense. I mean, he was great. He played a great third base. But again, he was brought in, you know, to close. And I think that he left Long Beach State because he didn't want, you know, he wasn't throwing that much and he wanted to hit. And he wanted to showcase, you know, his hitting ability. And we needed him. And little did we know that we needed him in our lineup. But I honestly think that that was because of him. I think that he didn't want that role. His role he wanted was to play third base, and he fulfilled that tremendously.
You guys win the national title in 99, and then it leads you to 2000, and basically everybody's coming back. You're barely losing any pieces, and everyone thought, wow, they win this title as juniors. They're going to come back as seniors. Coach Meggs is going to add to this incredible group, and the season was magical in so many respects. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with the great John Eric Hernandez, Chico State Hall of Famer. We'll talk about the 2000 season that started brilliantly for him and didn't end as brilliantly as all of the innings and all of the time he logged on the bump. It finally caught up with him late in the season, and a lot of us feel that, boy, if he stays healthy, and that's always the big if in baseball, if he stays healthy, the Wildcats may have made a fourth straight trip to Montgomery, Alabama. We don't like going over the painful stuff, but it's all part of it, and it all shapes us and shapes the program. We'll talk about the 2000 season, and, you know, John Eric feels the same way. Maybe the greatest team that Chico State's ever assembled, even though they didn't make it to Montgomery, Alabama. You're listening to Chat with a Cat right here on KPAY Sports 1290.
The Steakhouse Angus Thick Burger is back at Carl's Jr. The 100% Angus beef topped with steak seasoning lets you know it's premium. The dripping A1 sauce lets you know it's delicious. My elusive whisper lets you know it's decadent. Go eat the Steakhouse Angus Thick Burger, part of the Angus Burger lineup at Carl's Jr. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Carl's Jr. restaurants. Price of participation may vary. A1 is a registered trademark of Kraft Foods.
More of our conversation with Chico State standout Hall of Famer John Eric Hernandez, all-time wins leader. in the history of the Chico State program. So you win the title in 99. That makes three straight trips to Bama, two national titles, and a fourth-place finish. In Alabama, they're calling Chico State the Yankees of the West. The respect is not only regionally, it's national. The program has gone from a doormat, seven wins in 1992, to national championships and 40 and 50-win seasons. UC Davis hates us. Sonoma hates us. Stanislaus hates us, and it feels so good to be hated. And the 2000 season comes. It's your senior year. What are your thoughts going into that season?
I mean, I think that there's no way we're not going back to Bama. And I believe we started out, I think we're 30-5. We came out and we started blitzing people. It was a lot of fun. We had, you know, we carried over that chemistry that we had from 99. We had so many returning guys. We added a few, you know, new guys here and there. But it was a fun year. It was a fun year until the end.
What made the first 30-35 games? I mean, in my thoughts, you know, there was a way that you guys were beating teams in 97 and 98. They were just, you overwhelmed them. It was like a tsunami of runs. These other teams in 97 and 98, they would score, but they would lose 16-9. So they're sitting there going, we scored nine, but we can't stop them from scoring. But this 2000 team was beating teams 12-2, 14-3, 12-1. There was the offensive prowess, and there was also the depth on the mound. You, Carby, I know I'm forgetting people, but
Jason Kly.
Yeah. Oh, Derryman and Kly. Yes, Derryman. I mean, it was incredible. You went four deep, and then you had a bullpen with Grover, who was cleaning it up in 99 and cleaning it up in 2000, that could go multiple innings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, I think our pitching staff was the difference in the 2000 team. I mean, we really, really were firing on all cylinders, so to speak. But there was a turning point, you know, how we had a good turning point in 99. There was an unfortunate turning point in 2000 that really deflated us, and that's the Greg Merritt incident.
Yes, and Greg Merritt, who was a standout catcher, and Greg Merritt then was no longer with the team, and it was an omission from the ball club that really hurt him. It disrupted the chemistry a little bit. He was such a good backstop. You could really tell that you loved throwing to him. He was intricately involved in that, and it threw you guys off just a little bit, didn't it?
Definitely. I remember one time I wasn't having my best game, and it was at Sonoma, and we were still winning. But I was, you know, I wasn't myself, and I didn't have my stuff that day. And Greg came out to me one time and just was like lit into me. I was like, are you kidding me? I go, I don't have my stuff today. He's like, I don't care. He's like, the stuff you have tonight could beat these guys. He's like, and just absolutely pumped me up and fired me up. And I think I went four scoreless after that. I mean, he was that guy. He was that guy that we needed. And when he wasn't able to, you know, play the rest of the year, it really deflated us. I mean, it was tough. I mean, I remember we had Jason Kly back there at one time, and I went to Coach Meggs. I'm like, I'm not throwing to him. I can't do it.
Yeah, we're going to throw to our number two starter. I just can't do it. And that was tough. And you talk about the importance of a position. I think we really sometimes, and I have this conversation with a lot of Dodger fans, as they want Will Smith to play every single game. And I go, you don't realize that the pitchers don't like throwing to Will Smith. They like throwing to Austin Barnes, and that is important because Austin Barnes is a much, much better catcher. And people think it's about framing. No, it's the whole juicing me up, talking me up when I need to be kicked in the butt a little bit. It's calming me down, giving me a pat on the back when things go bad. It's all of that. You got to be kind of a psychologist / backstop.
Right, right. That's key, and I'm beginning. To realize, well, I should not say beginning to realize. I realize that that's the most important position on the ball field, in my opinion.
And your team in 2000 rolling along, unfortunately, tail end of the season, you go down with an injury. Again, what was the injury, and what, how painful was those last few weeks, and especially the regional weekend?
The regional, I believe, was my only loss that year, and I remember it was against Pomona. And the funny thing, Baca, I was you know, I talked to my wife. I think I was 41-9 in college, and I think five of my losses were to Pomona. They just had my number. I could not beat those guys. Anyways, I had dead arm. I think that I was never diagnosed with anything. Although when I went and played pro ball, I had some my elbow cleaned out with bone spurs and bone chips. But it felt like dead arm, and I just didn't have anything, in my arm. And talked to Scott Barker, who is he still there?
He is still
He's
here.
From Chico.
Yes.
Yeah. Talked to him, and he's like, let's don't go to the regionals. Hopefully they get to the World Series, and we'll rehab you and see what we can do. And I rehabbed that whole week, and then they left to the regional, and I had no doubt in my mind they're going to come back and win, especially when they won the first few games, and they had to be beaten twice. And then I'm thinking in my mind, we never lost two games in a row that year, not once.
It had been a year.
Oh, we're good.
It had been a year and a half since you'd been swept in a doubleheader. It was the middle of, it was the early portion. I believe it might have been the that Pomona. Pomona series from 99 was the last time you guys had been swept in a doubleheader. You easily handle a Texas team. You take on the host school, Fort Hays State. You easily beat them. And then Fort Hays State has to win later that night. And then they got to come back and beat you twice. But they don't have you. And they don't have Merritt catching. And they're at home. And the wind is blowing out. And you're playing on an infield that's AstroTurf that's got rivets and divots and not the greatest infield ever. And the balls that were flying out the first 2 days, not flying out on Championship Saturday. Game was still winnable in the first game, but a wayward ground ball that on any normal field without the terrible AstroTurf would come up for a fielder. It stayed down on Georgie Pena, and it opened the gates to a big inning for Fort Hays. But I'm still thinking that Chico State and, the guys are feeling pretty confident going into game two. It was really one of the first times I saw that team especially, get tight in that second game. And despite a rally, it came up a little bit short. That was pretty devastating. You're at home. You're listening. That had to just be crushing.
I had Arn Anderson, if you remember from Channel 7. He was at my house, and they were interviewing me, and I'm listening to the radio with Mike Hartman and Gabe Foster, my roommates at the time. And, we're listening to it, and I think I rehabbed that morning, and I'm sitting there, and we lose the first game, and then I'm listening to the second game, and I'm like, this is not how I envisioned losing or finishing my college career, was sitting in my board shorts listening to the radio. Yeah. That was a tough day. It was a very tough day.
Well, the game ends and Fort Hays celebrating. They, just knocked off three-time regional champs. It was very tough that whole trip. I mean, coming back from Hays, you're driving, I believe it was west or east to get to the airport about 2 hours, 3 hours in the middle of the night, hopping on the plane, flying back. Really a despondent group. But I think when you look back in its totality, and I still make this argument, I still believe the 2000 team was the best team that Chico State's ever had when healthy. When you had all the pieces, yourself healthy, Greg Merritt healthy, you'll get an argument. You'll get a ton of arguments from 97, 98, 99, and even 2002 they'll make an argument as well. But 2000 was complete. You guys really, really had it all. Do you stay in touch with those guys?
Yeah. Those guys, again, we talk all the time. I mean, we already started a chat this morning. There's about 10 of us, the SoCal guys. And then we get the other guys involved. We get, Jose Montez, McNeil, all those guys up in Northern California. And it's so much fun to talk to those guys. And a cool thing that I really, really enjoy, Baca, is like we have guys that are from other teams that didn't even play together. Arroyo didn't, play with Sal, and they're like best friends.
Yeah.
The alumni, I have friends from Catalina that are quote unquote, Wildcat alumni. I mean, Sal's brother-in-law, Adrian Beltre, he's a quote unquote alumni. Sal's best friend, quote unquote alumni. We're just a big, huge family, and we talk all the time, and I absolutely love it. It's just I'm so glad for my years at Chico because I have lifelong friends that I've made, and I want to trade it for the world.
How much pride do you take in how great the program has been for an extended period of time? Not only bridging, you know, the Lindsey Meggs years, and Dave Taylor has had this team very competitive as well over the past 15 years as well. A couple of trips to the World Series. And I honestly think it has been really, really difficult to – I don't think it'll be duplicated because the competitiveness and the level of baseball has completely changed. And I for one, think Chico State is a big reason why that completely changed. It raised the level of play in West Coast Division II baseball, and it's tough now. It is very tough to win a West Regional.
Yeah, I don't really know how much. I mean, I look at some of the teams. It's funny that you bring that up because I look at the teams that, you know, we would roll over and smash when I played, and these teams are really good teams now. And I'm like, wait, when did that? How did that happen? How did that happen? And I think you're right. I think it is a testament to what we were able to do. I mean, we were a program up there, and I don't mean we. I mean the coaching staff as well. I mean, they turned that program around, and I think a lot of other West Coast programs, you know, saw that and they were able to do the same. But I hear you, man. I mean, I went and watched APU play against Chico right before the pandemic hit, and I was watching these guys. I'm like, these guys are all throwing low 90s, and I'm like, I wouldn't even make either of these staffs. Like, it's crazy.
And you look at a lot of these programs, and one of them that comes to mind, San Diego, has now gone Division I. But when you see San Diego first move from Division III to Division II, their former coach Dan O'Brien, I remember him saying to Lindsey Meggs, he goes, "We're excited to play you because you guys have been so good for so long, and we want to measure ourselves against you." And at the time, San Diego was having a really good start to their season. Chico goes to San Diego, sweeps the four-game series, and I remember Chico left. I was still hanging around a little bit, and San Diego was still on the field having a discussion, and he was pointing over to the empty Chico State dugout as Chico's driving away in their vans, and he says, "Gentlemen, we now know," he goes, "do you see what they did to you this weekend? That's how far we have to go to be at their level. We are not at their level right now. Our goal is to be at their level, and we need to become a program like them." And it you know what? He got the ball rolling there at San Diego because a couple years later, they were advancing to the postseason. They were having really good seasons. They were knocking off Chico. All of a sudden, competitive series. And it really picked up where the Davis rivalry died when Davis went Division I. Mm-hmm. Before I leave you, I got to ask you about Davis. The rivalry that you had, there were skirmishes, there were bench clearing incidents, there were words, there was a genuine dislike between, and did it really start basically, did the players just take their cue from Meggs and Swimley?
God, I have so much respect for Phil Swimley. I loved him as a coach, but yes, we were, when they got in heated and argued, I mean, it trickled down to us. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't stand those guys. I mean, we would see them on the schedule, and it was a different week of practice when we faced them. It was just different. Everything was different. It was like playoff mentality. It's Davis, UC versus Cal State. You know, go to Davis, and they have some great rags. They have some great rags coming from the stands, and we have, you know, great rags from our fans. It was fun. It was the best rivalry. I mean, Sonoma was good too, but nothing like Davis. Again, yeah. They're UC versus Cal State.
Yeah, and I hearken back, and there have been some really good ones here. Chico State and San Diego, some juicy ones. Sonoma has always been juicy, but nothing matches the Davis thing. Because there were a couple of instances where it just appeared the players are like barking at each other, and then you're looking at like, wait a minute, where's Swimley going? Wait a minute, where's Meggs going? What are they doing?
Yep.
They're going at each other.
I remember one time when the benches cleared, and God, what was his name? The lefty. Vogel. Remember Vogel?
Yes.
And he Casey did a high tag, and Vogel came, and they bumped chest, and the benches cleared, and everyone's pushing and throwing, and there was a helmet thrown, and Swimley and Meggs were getting into it. And I remember looking when that happened. I was in the dugout in the bullpen. We ran in, and I'm looking over at Vogel and Casey, and they are almost like arm in arm, or like just. And I was like, "What are you guys talking about?" He's like, "Dude, you know, we came and we bumped chests and we said our piece, and that was it." And then all of a sudden, our teammates are freaking out, but we're just sitting there going, it's not that big of a deal." It was funny.
That's right. He did the high tag. They bumped, and then I think Casey turned and went to go pick up his helmet. But when the bump happened, the teams were so juiced up and fired up, they ran out there thinking something was going to happen when nothing was going to happen. And so Vogel and Glenn are kind of – Casey are just kind of sitting there going, what in the world's going on here?
Yeah.
And then Megs and Swimley are going at each other, and you're just like, what is going on here? This is – it's mayhem. And it turned out to be that play, that bench-clearing incident ended up costing UC Davis dearly, because I don't know if you remember that – Chico and Davis both had to forfeit three games because of that.
I do remember that, yeah.
Yes, and what happened was the next day we went down to Davis, and Davis swept Chico in a doubleheader. And they had to take losses for those, and it ended up costing them a postseason berth, I believe, in 1998, the end of the season. So it was a...
Wow, I didn't know that.
It was a crazy... It came down to some craziness, especially at that 98 season when it was... so up and down. I'm telling you, Gilly, we could go for a lot longer than we've gone. This has been amazing, reliving this. Your thoughts and the pride you feel in being a Chico State Wildcat.
I have to say that Chico State, my decision to go to Chico State was by far the best decision I ever made in my life. I've developed lifelong friends. I think that everyone up there, you know, it's a social school. I'm a social person. Chico was just amazing. I loved every bit of it. It was truly, truly the best time of my life. You know, coming from a small town in Catalina, everyone there welcomed me with open arms, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
An absolute stud is John Eric Hernandez. He was many consider the greatest pitcher in the history of the Chico State Wildcat baseball program, the all-time wins leader in Chico State history, along with other categories as well, innings pitched, strikeouts. He's up there in all of them, and he was part of two national championship teams, three teams that went to the Division II College World Series. And we are thrilled he joined us this afternoon on Chat with a Cat. And, hey, Gilly, next time we're playing baseball, which hopefully is next year, fingers crossed, we hope to see you when the Wildcats are down in SoCal.
Most definitely. Yeah, we'll get the boys, round them up, and we'll come see the game for sure.
Absolutely. John Eric Hernandez joining us here on Chat with a Cat. And it's right here on KPAY Sports 1290.